Audio Renaissance presents A Crown of Swords, Book 7 of The Wheel of Time, by Robert Jordan. Read by Kate Redding and Michael Kramer.
There can be no health in us, nor any good thing grow, for the land is one with the dragon reborn, and he one with the land. Soul of fire, heart of stone, in pride he conquers, forcing the proud to yield. He calls upon the mountains to kneel, and the seas to give way, and the very skies to bow. Pray that the heart of stone remembers tears, and the soul of fire love. From a much disputed translation of the Prophecies of the Dragon by the poet Kiera Termandal of Shiota, believed to have been published between FY 700 and FY 800. Prologue. Lightnings. From the tall arched window close onto 80 spans above the ground, not far below the top of the White Tower, Elida could see for miles beyond Tar Valon, to the rolling plains and forests that bordered the broad river Erinnan, running down from north and west, before it divided around the white walls of the great island city. On the ground, long morning shadows must have been dappling the city, but from this prominence all seemed clear and bright. Not even the fabled topless towers of Cairhien had truly rivaled the White Tower. Certainly none of Tar Valon's lesser towers did, for all that men spoke far and wide of them and their vaulting sky bridges. This high, an almost constant breeze lessened the unnatural heat gripping the world. The Feast of Lights passed, snow should have covered the ground deep, yet the weather belonged in the depths of a hard summer. Another sign that the last battle approached and the Dark One touched the world, if more were needed. Elida did not let the heat touch her, even when she descended, of course. The breeze was not why she had had her quarters moved up here, despite the inconvenience of so many stairs, to these simple rooms. Plain russet floor tiles and white marble floors decorated by a few tapestries could not compare with the grandeur of the Ammerlin's study and the rooms that went with it far below. She still used those rooms occasionally. They held associations with the power of the Ammerlin seat in some minds, but she resided here, and worked here more often than not. For the view. Not of city or river or forests, though, of what was beginning in the tower grounds. Great diggings and foundations spread across what had been the warder's practice yard, tall wooden cranes and stacks of cut marble and granite. Masons and laborers swarmed over the workings like ants, and endless streams of wagons trailed through the gates onto the tower grounds, bringing more stone. To one side stood a wooden working model, as the masons called it, big enough for men to enter crouching on their heels and see every detail, where every stone should go. Most of the workmen could not read, after all, neither words nor masons' drawn plans. The working model was as large as some manor houses. When any king or queen had a palace, why should the Ammerlin seat be relegated to apartments little better than those of many ordinary sisters? Her palace would match the White Tower for splendor, and have a great spire 10 spans higher than the tower itself. The blood had drained from the chief mason's face when he heard that. The tower had been Ogier built, with assistance from sisters using the power. One look at Elida's face, however, set Master Lerman bowing and stammering that, of course, all would be done as she wished. As if there had been any question. Her mouth tightened with exasperation. She had wanted Ogier masons again, but the Ogier were confining themselves to their steading for some reason. Her summons to the nearest, steading Jen Toyne in the Black Hills, had been met with refusal. Polite, yet still refusal, without
Sample complete. Ready to continue?